The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan's big electric switch. Scrappage is now available on your old car when you switch to a 100% electric Nissan Leaf.
That time of the week when John tells us about the life and times of someone who has recently died and someone you have probably never heard of and probably should have heard of. And John, this week it is Ole Anthony. Who was Ole Anthony?
A very striking figure, actually. He was physically very imposing. He was very tall, constantly smoked a pipe. He was quite a well-known political consultant with the Republican Party in Texas when he had a, which you could only describe as a road to Damascus moment. He found Jesus and he gave up a very comfy lifestyle to live in poverty. And he spent, this is his real mission in life. He spent the next 35 years going after what he called fraudulent, fraudster televangelists, faith healers and kind of religious scam artists, as he called them. He was pretty controversial, actually, pretty cantankerous figure as well. Somebody described him as a cross between an Old Testament prophet and a Wild West prospector.
All right. OK, so quite a unique individual, which is why we're talking about him. Tell me about his early life.
He was born in Minnesota, Norwegian immigrant family, and he grew up in a place called Wickenburg, Arizona, which is 60 miles from Phoenix. And I discovered it's known as, or it calls itself, the dude ranch capital of the world. He was brought up by his mother, because his dad left soon after they moved. And he had a fairly normal childhood until he was 16 years old. And then something, apparently in his own words, something snapped. And he became the most notorious juvenile delinquent in that little town. It was particularly evident on one occasion when he was 17, he and a friend poured petrol all along the base of a 40-foot wooden cross that was situated beside a local chapel, and he lit a match and the cross had been treated with creosote, so it burned forever, he said.
Right.
So that got him into big trouble.
All right. Okay. How did he get out of trouble?
Well, the cops, the police gave him sort of the usual ultimatum that you might get in a small town, delinquent situation, prison or enlist in the military. So he did the latter, and he chose the Air Force.
All right. OK, so he joined the Air Force. I assume, given everything you've told me about him, he didn't stay in the Air Force for too long. What did he do afterwards?
Not very long. He actually had a rough time because he was involved in monitoring a nuclear test in a South Pacific island, where the blast was much larger than was expected. And the radiation left him with tumours throughout his body. So, but he left the Air Force and got a job with a defense contractor. And he claimed that he continued to do work behind the scenes for the Air Force, in fact, behind the Iron Curtain and behind the Bamboo Curtain, where he had a training in electronics. And he claimed that he was looking at long-range sensors that could detect Chinese and Soviet nuclear tests. This was poo-pooed later by a Dallas newspaper, but he moved to Dallas, and that's where he became involved. That was in 1962. He became involved with the Republican Party as a fundraiser and consultant, and he worked on quite a number of campaigns, congressional campaigns, mayoral campaigns, and he actually ran himself and narrowly missed winning a seat in the state legislature. And he was very well paid. Like, he had a very high-end kind of lifestyle. He'd a high-rise apartment, 70 grand a year salary, which in today's money would be a lot.
Wow.
And what was described as a rotating series of girlfriends.
Okay. So things are looking up, maybe. He had, though, I understand, something of a Damascene conversion.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it was, it seems. He was a lapsed Lutheran, but in January 1972, he heard a preacher, a pastor, talking about death to self, self-denial, as the only way to God. And something happened for him. He said himself, God vaporized my value system the way a bomb vaporizes its target. He said, I was an atheist one day and a sold out believer the next. And he immediately gave up his position and his lifestyle, and he took this self-imposed vow of poverty and established his, what became quite well known, his Trinity Foundation in East Dallas.
Okay, tell me about that then, the Trinity Foundation.
Well, he tried to recruit wealthy Republicans in the Dallas area, but his style and his approach, kind of, which was colorful in the extreme, put them off. I mean, he had a tendency to discuss in some detail his sex life during Bible study. That didn't appeal to that particular section of society. So the foundation then became a kind of part religious community, part soup kitchen, part hippie hangout, part homeless shelter, part drugs rehab center, a publishing house, and ultimately it achieved some fame as a kind of private detective agency.
Oh, wow. Okay, so this really unusual, right? It started off as a new church finds itself as a private detective agency. I mean, was that then his mission in life, a PI?
That became his mission in life. I mean, the original foundation, you know, was definitely Bible studies, a very confrontational approach to Bible studies, which some people described as more like a fistfight or a barroom brawl. Because, like, a Dallas magazine reporter said, he was like a raging bull breathing scripture out of both nostrils. And apparently the soundtrack of shouting and furniture being thrown across the hall and doors slamming and tires squealing was the background to his Bible studies. But he was able to discover what did become his mission in life, because some homeless people who came to the foundation had a story that really angered him and set him on a particular course.
Okay, well, we have a little clip of him talking about being set on that course, that what became his mission in life.
When we took in all the homeless people, a significant number of the people had given their last dollar to one of the ministries and then went to them for help. And we're told to go to a social service agency. Well, that kind of callousness in the name of God just burned my bacon.
All right. Yeah, that was him speaking about what, as we said, became his mission. Tom, talk to me about investigating scam televangelists and what, garbology? Am I saying garbology. That correctly? Garbology.
I think that was something that one of the televangelists came up with, but he adopted the name for himself and his work. What happened was that one of his followers told him that he had given all his life savings to a prominent, very prominent televangelist called Robert Tilton, who had an $80 million a year business enterprise and was famous for kind of wacky antics on screen, like shadow boxing with the devil. One of his mantras, by the way, one of Tilton's mantras was, give me a buck and God will give you back 100. So what happened was that Ole and his followers decided to investigate Mr. Tilton. And he had his private investigator's license, and he got one, and he started to delve into the kind of lifestyles of people like Tilton. They were rooting through rubbish dumpsters behind Tilton's bank, and they found envelopes, they found prayer requests still in their envelopes. The envelopes had been opened only to remove the cash. I mean, it was just appalling. And apparently ABC's Primetime Live program covered the story, and Ole featured prominently in that report. Tilton was of course on the defensive. He claimed that he prayed so hard. You won't believe this, Kieran. He prayed so hard on the letters that the ink from the requests had seeped into his brain, so he knew what people were asking
for. Ah, yeah. Well, that completely understandable. defense. I mean, this is a huge, huge industry, televangelism. It's easy for us kind of to look at it kind of slightly askew from across the pond. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry there, and it's a big deal to expose fraud in it, I assume.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's something like 80 million evangelical Christians in the United States and well over a couple of thousand ministries that broadcast on radio or TV. And over the next 35 years, Ole's mission in life, the foundation's mission, was to go after these people or some of them. And they actually went after more than 300 televangelists.
Oh, right. Okay. So he really went hard at it. I mean, if he's involved in exposing fraud in this huge, huge industry, there must have been blowback.
There was quite a lot. I mean, some of the televangelists, as you can imagine, had lawyers, had plenty of funds, and had plenty of supporters. You know, born again Christian followers who were very angry. So they claimed that Ole was motivated by envy. One of their more prominent lawyers said he had high and mighty aspirations, but I think failure and bitterness has turned him into a professional critic. The word says that we will know them by their fruit. And his fruit, the lawyer said, is shriveled up and sour. So he wasn't pulling his punches.
No, certainly wasn't. Listen, tell me then a little bit about later life. He's got these televangelists maybe coming back at him, the foundation in a bit of financial trouble. What happened?
He had a lot of critics, and one of them published a book, a series of accusations, and the Dallas Observer started an investigative series, but he still continued on, right through in 1996. He was largely responsible for one prominent televangelist being imprisoned for tax evasion. And in 2007, he cooperated with the U.S. Senate Finance Committee investigation into televangelists. And he was dogged by ill health, but he never sort of toned down his confrontational style and his dogged pursuit of televangelists. Even last year, he was tracking the flights of various private jets that were owned by prominent television preachers.
All right.
And I suppose a postscript would be his own comment. There, he said sadly, "There's more fraud in the name of God than any other kind of fraud in the world. It's just heartbreaking."
All right. Okay. Well, he kept the good fight going right up until the end. John, a pleasure as always. You can listen back to this edition of The Last Post and to all editions, previous editions of The Last Post with John Kelleher. They're up on the News Talk app powered by Go Loud.